Okay, Chevra. Last time we did some broad topic that connects to the sugya of La'olam Behem Ta'avodu, right? The question that we have is Machlokas Rabbi Yishmor Rabbi Akiva. Is there an obligation of La'olam Behem Ta'avodu that you have to work with the Eved? Or is it only a Rishus? So Rabbi Yishmael assumes it's a Rishus. Rabbi Akiva says it's a Chova. And what we noted last time in passing is that there seems to be two different aspects of La'olam Behem Ta'avodu, and both of these come up in the Gemara that Emirta Hashem will be doing tonight. One aspect of La'olam Behem Ta'avodu is the prohibition to free an Eved. La'olam Behem Ta'avodu, I'm not allowed to free the Eved. If it's a Chova, if it's a Rishus, so then L'cha'ora, La'olam Behem Ta'avodu means I'm allowed to free the Eved. La'olam Behem Ta'avodu, I guess, would mean that what? You should, not that you're obligated, but you should work with them forever. But if you don't, okay, if you free them, not such a big deal, right? That was clear in the Gemara that we saw in Brachos, where the Gemara says that the Machlokes, we think that maybe Rabbi Eliezer who says that Rabbi Eliezer who freed the Eved, Zaktigor, maybe it's because he holds it's a Rishos. The Gemara says, no, we know from elsewhere that Rabbi Eliezer really holds it's Chova. So one aspect of La'olam Behem Ta'avodu is, are you allowed to free the Eved? The other aspect of La'olam Behem Ta'avodu is, am I allowed to give the Eved meaningless jobs? If you hold La'olam Behem Ta'avodu that you're always supposed to work, so then I'm supposed to give you work all the time. La'olam Behem Ta'avodu. However, if you hold it to Rishus, so then if you want your Eved to take a day off now and then, so kol hakavod, let the Eved take a day off. So these are the two aspects that come up in our Gemara. And now, let's learn the Gemara. Now, my voice is not great tonight. I have like a bit of a cold. There's someone who's going to volunteer to read after Ms. Rockland's question.
I thought you were going to make me read.
No, that would be scary. If I'd volunteer some money.
I know that in the Gemara, Lola means can mean really.
Can mean really, yeah, as opposed to forever. Yeah.
Right, but is that true of Tanakh also?
I don't think so. I was actually been thinking a lot about what the word olam really means in Tanakh. It means world, right, which is connected to forever. It also has some connotation of being hidden. Like le'elam, what? Ne'elam means hidden, right? So le'olam means to some extent that it is hidden. Don't ask why I'm going to say this now, but I'll just say it anyway because I'm in the mood. Reb Nachman of Breslov is very into meditating. And you meditate and you're supposed to do a mantra of saying Ribono Shel Olam, Ribono Shel Olam. That's like a Reb Nachman Breslov thing. And Olam means the fact that God is hidden wherever we are. Wherever we are on the planet, there's aspects of the Ribono Shel Olam. God is hidden in everything. Olam really has this connotation also of being hidden. The connotation of really, like you said, I think that's in rabbinic Hebrew. I do think it's connected to these ideas also. In other words, if I want to say something really exists, I'm saying it's like a permanent idea. It's something like the world, etc. Like the universe. Olam is more universe than world. Okay, that was totally random, but that's fine. What else? This is just a way of avoiding having someone have to read the Gemara for us. Anyone?
But I'm still not understanding how, if it means the second, if La'olam Behem Ta'avodu means that you can give them work,
La'olam Behem Ta'avodu means that they should always work. Olam in Tanakh means always. That's like universe is always existing, so to speak. And La'olam Behem Ta'avodu means that you should always make them work. So that means you have to give them work. And if they have a day off, make sure they work on it. That's the basic idea. Now this second part of La'olam Behem Ta'avodu is actually hidden, in this Gemara to some extent, but that's something that we'll pick up on. I think it's here. I don't think it's such a stretch. Okay, can someone please volunteer to read, just because I'm running low on voice? I'll be nice. I won't correct you much.
Sure.
Thank you, Sophia.
Okay. From like 5 or 6 lines.
Yeah, from the Olam Tavod, right from the beginning. Yeah.
The Olam Tavod, Rishut Devar Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Kiva Merchova, my Tama, the Rabbi Ishmael, I dichtev lo techer kol shema, it's Rechmani lechtav Olam Tavod.
Okay. Pause. It's the middle of the Mishrei.
The
Mishrei
had Kolamot Sheba Akavit. Well, the Mimena Ben Shatara Shailik Noto.
Comma, period, stop, whatever. yeah, why don't you try to translate? By the way, it's not Lo Tichia, it's Lo Tichaya Kol Neshama. Right? Tichaya means don't keep them alive, etc. Okay. yeah, why don't you try to. Why don't you try to translate? Yeah.
So the pasuk says, "Lomam tavodu," and Rabbi Ishmael says, "It's a rishu." Rabbi Kiva says, "It's a chova." What's the reasoning of Rabbi Ishmael? Since the pasuk says you're not allowed to keep all them alive, implying the seven nations, we also need a separate pasuk to teach us "Lomam tavodu" to allow us that if one of the nations sleeps with a kanit woman and then she gives birth to a son, that you're allowed to have that.
Good, beautiful. So, the Gemara is following the same form that the Gemara followed in all of the other cases. I have one pasuk that would indicate that such and such should be asur. I have a pasuk that says, Lo tisnat aficha bovavecha, therefore I would think kinoy is asur, right? So we say, no, kinoy is permitted. That's Rabbi Yishmael Judaism. Here also, Rabbi Yishmael is saying, since the Torah writes, Lo techaya kol neshama, the Torah writes that you're not allowed to keep any kanani alive, so I would think that you cannot have an institution of Eved Kanani. Eved Kanani is an impossibility, because you have to kill every Canaanite. That's why I need the pasuk Lo'olam behem ta'avodu, says Rabbi Yishmael, to tell me that I'm allowed to have an Eved. It's permitted. And he gives the case of someone, Echad Mikol HaUmot, someone, a male from one of the other nations. Now, other nations means not the seven, right? Kena'ani means of the seven. If it's Echad Mikol HaUmot, it's someone from another nation who has relations with a Kena'ani woman, so you're allowed to purchase that person as an Eved. That's what Rabbi Yishmael says.
As an Eved Kanani is not a Kanani.
So this is the amazing thing. Eved Kanani is not a Kanani. The word Kanani, Eved Kanani can be a Kanani in the sense of a Kanani from the mother's side, no? But Eved Kanani can't be a real Kanani, because if it's a real Kanani, you can't have them as an Eved, you have to kill them. It's really a misnomer.
Wasn't there a whole thing with like the seven nations? Weren't they given an option that to like accept?
Yeah, so this is a big problem. The Bali HaTosfos later on in the Masechta raise a question, how come Yehoshua was Korei L'Shalom? You're really not supposed to do that to the Zion Amimim. I could look around for it. There's a Tosfos like in the 7th Perek or something who deals with that question. It should be Aser. How can you have a Heter? Here, Taisus on Lamed Hayamid Beis asks, the bottom Taisus on Lamed Hayamid Beis asks that question, basically. However, how can you ever have, here. mean, if you pick up in the Tisus, like from the, there's like narrow lines, medium wides, and very wides. So the Balei HaTosfos have a comment that maybe the pasuk is only talking about Lo Tchayek HaNeshama is after Yehoshua. No.
Right. Well, because after
Kish. La'achar shehitcho Yehoshua b'mochama, that Yehoshua was shalach shalosh parzut gemaos. And one of them is, if you want to make peace, you can make peace. So we see that Yehoshua offered them to become peace, to make peace. How could that be? How come you have someone named Rachav, who's a Kenaanis? Rachav ends up marrying Yehoshua, no? How did that happen? Don't you have to kill all the Kenaanim? So you have to really work very hard on this question. And the Balei HaTosfos say, yeah, apparently the Isser only began after Klal Yisrael takes over Eretz Yisrael, but Bizman Yehoshua, it's permitted. That's basically the way it works. Again, I didn't really prepare this sugya, but the Radak in Yehoshua argues on Tosfos, no? Doesn't the Radak say that when Yehoshua offered to make peace, he wasn't really offering to make peace. He was going to kill them anyway. Something to that. What? Yeah, so Rachav is another question that we'd have to answer separately. But that's all this discussion in Tyson Lamed Hay on the base. Again, that's your question, Sophia. Hi.
But does he marry Rachav in the text explicitly, or is that a midrash? Does he actually marry
Rachav? The pasuk doesn't say he marries Rachav,
so
then no.
That's a way of solving the issue of marrying Rachav, is that
okay.
One approach.
Yeah, but again, but we're assuming that the Midrashim are conveying something that's true.
No, but you're not supposed to take the Midrashim literally.
Okay, but I mean, the pasuk says that they promised to keep Rachav alive. The pasuk doesn't say that Yehoshua married Rachav. Right? Didn't Rachav say that you should keep me and my brothers and my sisters alive, right?
Yeah.
So, by the way, when I was in fifth grade, they told us that Rachav sold food. Right? That was the official... There are two explanations. Right. Okay, got it. Weiter. So I see two things from this Gemara so far. The word Kena'ani... The word Eved Kenani is a misnomer. That's one point. The next point that I see from this Gemara is that the chiyuv to kill a Kenani is different than the chiyuv to kill Amalek. Last time we learned, we spoke about the Sefer HaChinuch, who says that women are exempt from Parshas Zachar because Zachar is a way to get us angry at Amalek, so that we'll go and we'll have a war with them and we'll kill them. And since Noshim Anapenos Mochama, since women aren't conscripted into the army, so therefore, the Sefer HaChinuch says, women are exempt from Parsha Zohar. You see from that Chinuch, that the mitzvah to kill an Amaleki is true only in the context of war. If you see an Amaleki walking down the street, so you have no chiyuv to kill them, no? Kena'anim are different than Amalekim. The Zayin Amimim, apparently the Chi... It's clear from this Gemara, no? I would have thought that you can't have an Eved. Why? Because you're Mechuyev to kill them. Why am I Mechuyev to kill them? If it's only Be'is Mochama that I have to kill them, why can't I have an Eved? The answer is that no, killing Kena'anim is not only in the context of war. The mitzvah to kill Amalek and the mitzvah to kill Kena'an, I apologize for giving you non-politically correct Torah, but the mitzvah to kill Kena'anim is because the Torah writes, Lo tilmad la'asos ketoavos hagoyim ha'ele. No? The assumption is that the people in Kena'an are very degenerate, and we might learn from their bad actions. These are psukim in the Torah. These are psukim in the Torah. The mitzvah to kill Amalek is not because we might learn from their negative things, but killing Amalek is because they attacked us when we left Mitzrayim. Killing Canaan, because it's about their bad midos, or however I want to say it, so therefore even the individual has to be killed, even if it's not in the context of war. Killing Amalek is only in the context of war because the mitzvah to kill them is to punish them for what they did to us, where they as a nation attacked us. So we as a nation, right, mochama is something that's done by a nation, we as a nation have to kill them. It's like a totally different, mitzvah. This is why you know the Aveira song?
Yes.
So in the Aveira song, they have the Feirish mistake. In the Aveira song, the guy says that one of his Aveiras is, whenever I see an Amaleki, I don't kill him. Right, that's one of the official lines in the song.
What?
If they would say Kanani, that would be much better. But L'cha'ira, it's a terrible mistake. I don't know. I don't know what to do with it.
The bigger
Aveira
is that
we
didn't know.
That right.
I have a question. If that's true, I forgot which exact nations, but when, like, Moshe wanted Nisrael to go through that, was it Amori people? He wanted Nisrael to go through.
Edom?
Edom.
Vayom Edom lo safer be, yeah.
And then they attack, so why would we not have the same chiv to fight the night? If this is all a din in the Kama.
Again, Amalek we treat more severely than the other nations that attacked us, etc. Because, like Rashi comments, we are like the hot boiling bathtub. And everyone's going to stay away from Klal Yisrael because we had Kriyas Yamsuf. And we're like so beyond what anyone could imagine. Who would want to start up with the Jewish people? So Amalek is worse than the others precisely because they were first. I think that's the pshat. Oh. Okay, so the Gemara basically says, I would have thought that it's not permitted to have an Eved, because it says, well, Techaya Kol Neshama, and I would have thought that in a case when a member of another nation has relations with a Kana'ani, that you are not allowed to have the kid. So the Pasuk says, no, it is permitted. Detanya, Sophia, you're doing a great job. Are you
should
willing?
Should I keep on reading?
One second, yeah.
If a non-Kanani man and a Jewish woman have a child.
A non-Kanani man and a Jewish... The kid is a full-fledged Jew.
But for non-Kanani name, it goes by the father.
We're going to discuss everything, right? Tosis has a line that this is the source of halacha har hazachar.
Rashi also says that,
correct. Everyone says that besides the Rambam, who creates all the problems in Judaism, but we'll discuss it later.
Okay.
Give me a few minutes. Sophia? Yeah.
Yes, okay. Titania.
Comma, semicolon, stop. Okay? So you want to explain what you just read?
Sure.
What does the Brisa say?
So, how do we know that if you have someone not from the seven nations that sleeps with someone from a woman from the seven nations, and then she gives birth to a son, that you're allowed to have that child as an Eved? The Pasuk says, as in like from the Pnei Toshavim, like you are allowed to ikhone them. And you might have thought that the Pasuk implies, even if the dad is from the seven nations, and then like sleeps with someone from not the seven nations, but it's, we know that it's not like that because the Pasuk says, Asher Halidu Bartzachem, so specifically from people born in the land and not from people that live in the land.
Okay, so we have two Pasukim basically. One Pasuk says you're allowed to keep them as an Eved, the next Pasuk says you're not. And the Gemara answers that there's a difference between Min HaNoladim Bartzachem versus Min HaGarim Bartzachem. Right? In one case, in the case where the father is from the Umos, from a regular nation, but the mother is from Kanaani, so this is, in that case you're allowed to have an Eved. In the case where the father is a Kanaani and the mother is from another one of the nations, then you can't. How How do I know which is which? What does the word min hanoladim ba'artzachem v'lo min hagarim ba'artzachem? Who wants to explain this to me? And I think there was a mi'iri that I gave you that offered a clearer explanation than we would have had otherwise. Anyone wants to fill me in on what this is? Min hanoladim ba'artzachem versus min hagarim ba'artzachem.
You can't, just to clarify, one says you can take the child as an eved. So when the mother's from the umon and the dad's a kanani, then you can't take the child as an eved because it's a kelim.
Correct. Right, if dad is a kanani and the mother is, I don't know, some Persian something or whatever, from a different nation, not from the Zion umot, so then you have to kill the kid. That's exactly what, sounds so bad, but that's exactly what the Torah says. Okay. So I'm allowed to have an, again, this is what a Mizrachim pointed out a few minutes ago. The term Eved Kenani is wrong, because the one who's going to be an Eved is actually not a Kenani. Right? If daddy is from Canaan, so then you have to kill the kid. The only time you could have an Eved is when daddy is not from Canaan. So what does it mean, min hanoladim ba'artzachem v'lo min hagarim ba'artzachem? Who wants to just explain this line? You're making me do it. Terrible. Okay, so it goes like this, I think. Generally speaking, a man goes to the community where his wife lived and begins married life there. Afterwards, you will go and move somewhere else as a family. Min hanoladim ba'artzachem, those who are born in your land, meaning if mommy is from Canaan, so the father who's from a different area will go and will live in Canaan with mommy at the beginning of marriage, so to speak, and they'll have a kid in Canaan, that kid you could keep. V'lo min hagarim ba'artzachem. But you cannot have someone who's temporarily residing in your land, you can't have that kid as an Eved. Why? Lo min hagarim ba'artzachem, according to Rashi, is the children who are born to those members of your, to the male members of your land, somewhere else, they cannot be an Eved, they have to be killed. This is like a whole mouthful that's hard to say. Can anyone say this in a better way? I forgot to tell you.
Thinking about it.
I just called you because I thought your hand was up.
Oh.
I wasn't putting you on the spot. I try not to put people on the spot.
Do you want to do it or should you go for it? I'm just saying, there's like a societal rule that wherever the mom of the child is, that's where the kid is going to, I guess, be raised at first.
Mm-hmm.
So it all falls after where the kid's being raised. If the kid's being raised in Eretz Yisrael, because that means the mom's from the seven nations, then you can have it. Then in a way, it's Kanani that way, because it was raised there.
Right.
But if, so it's falling.
But if the kid is raised outside of Eretz Yisrael, that means mom is from outside of Eretz Yisrael, and dad is a Kanani, so then you can't have the kid.
Which is such a long-winded way. I was just saying that, I guess we follow the dad to kill.
So basically, this is a long-winded way of saying that we follow the dad. If daddy, and this is the line that Tosfos quotes, ba'umot halach achar hazachar. Ba'umot means, and this I think will answer your question from a few minutes ago, ba'umot means when I have a relationship between two non-Jews, and I want to know which nation are you part of. And this is relevant for halachos of Mitzri, Adomi, Moavi, etc. There's a whole bunch of nations that the Torah says in various levels we should avoid. Well, let's say you have an intermarriage. You have a Mitzri and an Adomi. Which one is it? Ba'umot, halach achar hazachar. Among non-Jews, we follow patrilineal descent. Judaism believes in patrilineal descent for Goyim. Right, that's basically what this Gemara is saying. Nachon? Right, I'm just reading the Gemara. Right? So we follow patrilineal descent for the Goyim, that is Ba'umot, halach achar hazachar. And the note on the side, right, so Inyan Yuchsin, Yuchsin over here doesn't mean what we usually call Yichus, like Kohen Levi, whether your grandfather is Reb Kiva Eger, right? What we call Yichus isn't what it means. What they are talking about Yichus is, they're talking about Yichus in the context of which nation are you from? Are you from Edom or Moab, etc.? That's Yichus in this context.
Now, can I ask my question on the opposite end? If a Jewish man and a non-Jewish man have a child, now the child has no nationality.
Now the child is by Jews, whenever one of the parties is a Jew, so we follow matrilineal descent, no?
So now he is the nation of his mother? Even though...
Right. So that's an interesting question. So I don't think the child is considered a Kanani or a Mitzri. We were just Mitahir, the Mitzriness. We got you out of being a Mitzri because daddy is a Jew.
So he's not
that. Right. He's a plain, ordinary guy with no special halachos attached. That's right. Let's go on. Rabbi Akiva. Does anyone want to take over for Sophia?
Really? I could continue.
Huh? You want to continue?
I could.
That would be great.
Okay.
And everyone is very appreciative.
Rabbi Akiva, me mahen tiknu, nafga. And Rabbi Akiva learned, I guess, that whole halacha that we follow. The dad from, yeah?
Right.
From me.
Mehem tiknu. Well, you know, so that pasuk teaches me, right. Good. Vaiter.
So why do we have that pasuk? To show that, like, you have to follow enslave them.
You have to, right, there's an obligation to enslave them, etc., like we've been discussing. Rabbi Yishmael.
Rabbi Yishmael, he says, specifically, them and not your fellow Jews.
What does that mean?
That you cannot enslave your fellow Jews in this way.
So look at Rashi. V'lo b'acheichem is avodat eved, right? This is what I began in the introduction, that this is the second type of olam b'hem ta'avodu. B'hem, you can do avodat eved. Avodat eved means giving them menial slave labor. Giving them labor for no real purpose.
Rabbi Akiva learns that Sein Halacha from the Pasuk would say that explicitly.
Right.
Rabbi Shmuel, I did dichtiv, uva'achichem, ktiv nami bahem,
beautiful. Okay. Whenever you have extra psukim, maybe Shmuel feels an extra pasuk is just extra. Okay. So now, basically, everyone agrees that an eved kena'ani, you can give avodat eved to, you could give them the slave labor, menial work, the type of work just to keep them busy, that's permitted, but not for Jews. Jews, you cannot do that type of work for. Nachon? That's what emerges in this Gemara. Now, what type of Jew am I talking about? So the Magen Avram in Simen Kuf Samach Tesef Katan Aleph. I did not know this Mara Makom when I gave you the sources. I found it after. That is why it wasn't on your source sheet. The Magen Avram in Oyre Chaim Simen Kuf Samach Tesef Katan Aleph. The Magen Avram, it's like a funny din. The halacha is as follows. He's commenting on this Mechaber. If I have a waiter, and the waiter is bringing food, So I don't have to give food to the waiter. The waiter's bringing the food. The waiter doesn't have a right to eat some of the food. I, as the balabayas, don't have an obligation to give the waiter food. However, if the food smells really good, so it says in Shulchan Aruch, you have to give some to the waiter, because we're worried that the waiter is going to become very hungry, and it won't be healthy, so you have to give the waiter the really good-smelling food. Okay? It's a midas chasidus to always give the waiter food from every type of food that you are presenting, even if it does not smell particularly good. That's all in the Mechaber, etc. Comes from the Magen Avraham. And the Magen Avraham says, you know, I got a problem. How come, even though this is the din, but we don't give our waiters food? I don't know if any of you ever worked jobs as waiters. It's like a high school kid thing sometimes, like to earn some extra money, right? So, do you have to give the waiter food? So, according to technical din in Shulchan Aruch, if the food smells good, it's a chiyuv. Doesn't smell good, it's midas chasidus. The Magen Avraham is bothered. How come ain anu nohagin litein l'shamish mikol min v'min? How come we don't do it? So the Magen Avraham works hard on this question. And the Magen Avraham answers, well, the basic idea is that our waiters get paid. And they get paid. And they are not, even though they get paid, or let me say it like this, not really about being paid. The Magen Avraham explains, let me say it better, Magen Avraham explains that our waiters are not avodim at all because they can back out. Po'el yochol lachzor b'afilo b'chetzi hayom. The Gemara above Metzia tells me that kili b'nei Yisrael avodim, that a Jewish worker, a po'el, can back out in the middle of the deal. I work for you, I'm not happy in the middle, I could say, I'm out of here. If that's the case, so then our workers are not at all avodim. And if they're not at all avodim, so memela, we don't have the chiyuvim of giving food to them, because those are chiyuvim to an eved. That's basically what the Magen Avraham is answering. That these chiyuvim in Shulchan Aruch are chiyuvim to an eved, and anyone who could back out in the middle of the job is not halachically an eved. Stage one. And then the Magen Avraham throws in the point that's relevant for us. The idea of i'ata roda b'farech, giving them the hard labor. Says the Magen Avraham, that halacha that I'm not allowed to give hard labor to a worker is only if the worker has the din of an eved. But if the worker could back out on his or her own whenever they so desire, the worker is a po'el who's yachol lachzor bo b'chetzi hayom. So then such a worker you are allowed to give meaningless labor to. Right? The Magen Avraham is almost paradoxical, no? Precisely because the worker can back out whenever the worker wants, so therefore, I, as the Adon, don't have obligations to that worker.
Why do you have to feed him if it smells good?
Because you'll get sick. Mm-hmm. If you have food that smells really good and you don't eat it, you'll get very sick, and we don't want people to get sick. that's the halakha in Shulchan Aruch.
Didn't Shulchan Aruch also pay his waiters?
So the Magen Avraham is assuming that. He's making an assumption. But the issue for the Magen Avraham isn't whether or not you get paid. The issue for the Magen Avraham is more about whether you can back out. Do you have the type of deal that you can't back out of? Many of the Rishonim say, the Mordechai and Bava Metzia says, that a Jewish person is never allowed to have a contract for more than 3 years. Because the Pasuk writes about a Sakhir that Kishnei Sakhir or something, which we understand is that an Eved Ivri is like two Sakhirs. don't ask. And if an Eved is like 2 sakhirs, an Eved if he works for 6 years, that means 1 sakhir is for 3 years. You can't work for more than 3 years. If you work for more than 3 years, you're called an Eved. You're also, according to this, you're not supposed to have a contract, no? If you have a contract, you can't back out and mow the contract. The halacha of a worker who's able to back out is a worker who has no contract. Once the worker signs a contract, so l'cha'ora, you shouldn't back out. No? The Magen Avraham is saying that precisely because you are not the type of worker that the Adon has responsibilities to, in other words, you're not an Eved, so therefore, the Adon doesn't have to give you the food when it smells good, and therefore, says the Magen Avraham, the Adon doesn't have the responsibility not to work you in this menial type of labor. This is all the comment of the Magen Avraham. The Chassam Sofer on the side of the Shulchan Aruch says, whoa, Magen Avraham, like, what are you talking about? This halacha that you can't give someone menial labor, give a job that has no purpose, etc., that's not limited to an Eved. That's a halacha that you have to respect human beings and don't give them jobs that have no purpose. So even if the person is not halachically an Eved, the halacha still applies. But the Magen Avraham is assuming that this din that we're talking about now, the halacha that for a Jew you should not give meaningless work, the Magen Avraham is saying that halacha is true only by an Eved. That's what the machlokes between the Magen Avraham and the Chassam Sofer is about. Now, the Pashtus in our Gemara, I thought, is more like the Chassam Sofer than the Magen Avraham, no? Our Gemara is contrasting Ba'acheichem b'nei Yisrael. We're saying Bohem, meaning among them, among Avodim Kenanim, velo Ba'acheichem, and not amongst your brothers. So does your brother over here mean only an Eved Ivri? That's what the Magen Avraham is saying. Yeah, I get an impression that Lo Tirdeh B'Befarech is not only on the Eved part, but it's on any Jew. Yeah, but obviously this is a machlokes between the Magen Avraham and the Chassam Sofer. I would just argue that the easier way to read the Gemara is that's talking about any Jew. Good? Now, we mentioned that the way Rashi and Tosfos learn this Gemara, the Gemara is telling me a halacha as to who can I purchase as an Eved and who am I obligated to kill. And with respect to that, we say it really depends who daddy is. But umot halacha harzachar, right? If the daddy is a Kenani, you have to kill the kid. If the daddy is from the other umos, you don't. This is the way most Jews learn the Gemara. But then the Rambam came along, and the Rambam said something very different. Does anyone remember what the Rambam said? Did anyone have a chance to prepare the Rambam? So the Rambam is the opposite and different. The opposite in that the Rambam is saying, at least the way the Kesef Mishnah reads the Rambam, that ba'umot halach achar hanekeva. And it's also different because the issue at hand, according to the Rambam, is not whether you are a Kena'ani or not a Kena'ani in the sense of do we have to kill you, but rather the issue is are you an Eved or not an Eved? Meaning, according to the Rambam, Echad min ha'umos sheba shifcha kenanis, harei haben eved kenani. If mommy is a kenanis, not in the sense of a Canaanite, but in the sense of mommy is a shifcha, so then the kid is an eved. But, and he quotes the pasuk asher holidu ba'aretzachem, but if it's an eved who has relations with one of the umos, who is not a eved, not a shifcha kana'anis, then the kid is not an eved. For the Rambam, the issue at hand is, if mommy is an eved, the kid's an eved. If mommy is not an eved, the kid is not an eved. So we follow mommy, halacha chahana keva, and the issue at hand is whether or not the kid is an eved. The Ravid takes this Rambam. The Ravid, by the way, did not mince words. So the Ravid takes this Rambam. I always thought this like a cute thing. Right, the Ravid writes, "Amar Havram zehu behepech mimasha amru b'gemara." It's the opposite of our Gemara. Right, the Gemara says, "But most halachachar hazachar," and it's talking about le'inyan lo techayeko neshama, whether you're allowed to keep him alive as an ever or not, etc., etc. Hu mahapech halashonot umevalbel ha'inyanim. The Rambam turns everything upside down, meaning he says halachachar nekeva, and he's mevalbel ha'inyanim. Because instead of talking about whether you have to kill the kid or not, the Rambam is speaking about whether the kid is an eved or not an eved. V'katav b'kan eved kenani l'kiyum ha'eved ba'avur la'asot Torah chadasha. Right? The Ravid says about this Rambam that the Rambam is trying to make a new Torah. That is a very serious attack. If you are a Ravid person who lives in the south of France in the 12th century, Torah Hadasha is a very defined term. Torah Hadasha means Christian. No? That's what it means. The Ravid is attacking the Rambam, and the Ravid is saying, Rambam, what you are doing is a Torah Hadasha. Okay, so the Ravid says, this is a Tos Gedola, the whole Rambam doesn't make any sense, right? The Ravid does not like this at all. Okay, that's what the Ravid says. Now, what's the pshat in the Rambam? Why does the Rambam not quote our Gemara? The Rambam is basically using the same psukim that are found in our Gemara, but he's making up his own drasha entirely. It has nothing to do with what our Gemara says. Why does the Rambam not quote the din in our Gemara? So the Radvaz writes. The Radvaz, by the way, was
one of the
celebrations. What? Rabbi David ben Zimra. When did he live? When did he die? So Radvaz is an interesting figure. The Radvaz was the chief rabbi in Cairo. And when he's 80 years old, he says, listen, I've been in Egypt, right? I'm 80, I'm about to die. Let me go to Israel and live in Eretz Yisrael until I die and everything's going to be grand. And he wasn't really interested. The Radvaz wrote like a massive amount of tshuvas. He wrote like 5,000 tshuvas. And decides to go to Eretz Yisrael and to live out his years in a place where like no one is there. So he chooses a community called Tzfat. And no one is there. His bad luck. Right when he comes to Tzfat, all these young Mekubal whippersnappers move into Tzfat at that time. And the 110-year-old Radvaz, he died at age 110, has a Talmud who dies at 34, who predeceases the Radvaz, named the Arizal. The Arizal had a Rebbe called the Radvaz. It's kind of like, the Radvaz wrote like 5,000 tshuvas. He wrote a running commentary on the Rambam. We don't have the Radvaz on everything, but he wrote on all of Rambam. So Radvaz has a comment over here that we have a tradition that Basan Cheirev Ubilbel Eskol Ha'umos, no? That Sancheirev went and he messed up all the nations. He mixed the psukim sound, say that, no? That he moved people from here to there and there to here. So we don't know who's from what nation anymore. If we don't know who's from what nation anymore, so the Rambam can't quote the halacha of whether you're a Kana'ani or not a Kana'ani, because the Rambam's a practical halacha guide. And whether or not you're a Kana'ani is irrelevant for us, because no one's a Kana'ani. I don't know who's a Kana'ani. But the halacha of whether or not you're an Eved, that's a relevant halacha. So that's the din that the Radvaz quotes. That's the din. Excuse me. That the Rambam quotes the regular dinim of an Eved. Effectively, the Rambam is taking a halacha that seems to be a halacha in what I would call Isser Veheter, Yeridea, etc. A halacha in Shulchan Aruch related to who you can marry, who you can't marry. Maybe we'll say it's an Evan Ha'ezer. Right? There are halachos of marriage, halachos of what nation you are. And the Rambam is making it into a din of Choshen Mishpat. Into just a pure monetary din, whether or not you are considered by default to be an Eved. The offspring of a Shifcha Knanis, by definition, is an Eved. The Rambam is saying this din based on the Psukim, because the regular way of our Gemara is not relevant after Sancheiriv came and was mevalbel kol ha'umos. That's what the Radvaz says in explanation of the Rambam. Good. What else is there to discuss, ladies? Did anyone do the next Gemara? A couple of lines of Agadata? Okay. So then, I guess we go into break. I'll try to give some more Marimakomos for tomorrow. Etc. I just apologize. I have a Din Torah tomorrow, so I decided to say Shir tonight. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. And Emir Tashem will continue learning Torah as long as we're on this planet. Thank you.